Welcome back to the program. I'm Michael Cohen with producer James Platy. Well, if you're like me and have a little organ donor sticker on your Michigan driver's license, you may be tempted to peel it right off after you hear what my next guest has to say about exactly how doctors determine when you're ready to hand over your essential parts. Dick Teresi is the author of The Undead, Organ Harvesting, The Ice Water Test, Beating Heart Cadavers, How Medicine is Blurring the Line Between Life and Death. And Dick joins me now. Thank you very much for coming on the program this evening.
Sure. Hi.
You know, I bumped into your piece in the Wall Street Journal talking about your own decision not to be an organ donor. Do you have a real concern that this kind of a decision could be made before you're truly dead?
Well, I do, yeah. Back in the 1970s, I was an editor at Good Housekeeping. I actually ran a piece encouraging people to be organ donors. But when I looked into it recently, I found it to be kind of frightening.
So let's talk about exactly how doctors determine that it is time for your organs to be harvested if you have declared yourself to be a donor. What is the process of determining that?
Well, people should know that there are now two definitions of death since 1981. It's been legal for doctors to declare you brain dead, as well as using the old cardiopulmonary standard of death, which is your heart stopped and you stop breathing. Now your heart can keep going and you can still be breathing on a ventilator and still be dead if you fail a number of tests or pass a number of tests, depending on how you see it. These are tests that see if your brainstem only is operating or not operating. This is a sort of stalk-like organ at the very base of the brain just before the spinal cord starts.
When you talk about testing to make sure that that your brain isn't fully active or is essentially dead, is it a complex medical exam they do?
It's shorter than my last bifocals exam, actually. And that's not to denigrate the doctors who do it. The doctors I met were very, very serious, seemingly compassionate people. But it involves, for example, squirting ice water in your ears to see if your eyes react, turning your head back and forth to see if your eyes, if there's a delay in your eyes focusing when your eyes move. If there isn't, that means that's you're probably dead. Touching the corneas with a Q-tip, and then some other reflex, simple reflexive tests. And then the final test is called the apnea test, in which they disconnect the ventilator momentarily to see if you can breathe on your own, to see if you gasp for air. And if you don't, then you're legally dead.
So when it comes to actually harvesting the organs, is the key to keep the body somewhat alive in the sense that the blood is still circulating through the body to avoid organ damage? And how quickly do organs become useless once the body goes cold?
Well, that's a good question. There really was no reason for this new standard of death because we were doing pretty well with the old, you know, heart stop breathing death for centuries. But the reason for this is that organ transplantation had grown by leaps and bounds in the 50s and 60s. But the problem is that the organs in dead people, normally conventionally dead people, would spoil, to use a layman's term. When your heart stops, the blood stops circulating, and the organs which need oxygen and other nutrients no longer get it, and then they have to be put into a cooler and shipped to wherever, to whoever the recipient is. But if you were still a little bit alive enough so that your heart was still beating, the organs would remain fresh, and then when they took them out, they'd have more time in which to find the recipient to put them into. So that's why we need brain death, is to facilitate the whole organ transplantation operation.
I'm talking to Dick Teresi. He's the author of the book, The Undead, Organ Harvesting, The Ice Water Test, Beating Heart Cadavers, How Medicine is Blurring the Line Between Life and Death. When you talk about the doctors maintaining life, how long can may doctors sometimes keep a body breathing and blood circulating as they pull organs out of it?
Well, we get into sort of very Orwellian language here because as soon as a patient is declared brain dead, he's put immediately on what they call life support. Now, that sounds weird that you're putting a corpse on life support, but that's what they call it. They hook the ventilator right back up again, and the heart then starts up again, and we've got blood flow and oxygen. If this is a donor for, if this is an organ donor, usually within 12 to 24 hours, he'll be harvested. The organs will be removed. So that's all the time they have to keep these patients alive. And I put alive in quotes because technically they're dead. Legally they're dead. They're simply biologically alive. However, there have been cases where they were not harvested immediately, and their hearts kept on beating. For example, the best example are brain-dead pregnant women. A woman has head trauma, she's in a car accident, she's pregnant, and she's fairly well along. Can you keep that woman on life support, even though she's brain-dead, long enough to deliver the baby? And the answer is yes. 22 women have delivered babies after they've been declared dead. One woman lasted 107 days.
Is it clear that there's no ability to sense pain in this state and that there's no real chance that a human being is perceiving any of these things happening in these kind of, I guess you could almost call them half-dead states?
Well, the doctors in the transplant business assure us that there is no chance, but there's no empirical evidence they can give us. The evidence is very unsettling, which is that many anesthesiologists refuse to do these organ harvests anymore because they're not allowed to give anesthetic. And they see these patients reacting just like living patients react when they don't get enough anesthetic. You know, their blood pressure will zoom, their heart, their pulse will zoom, especially, for example, when the scalpel is first inserted. You'll see this peaking of blood pressure. And you'll also see it when the doctor is manipulating the organs and about to take them out. You'll see heart rate zooming upwards. So they're not convinced that nothing is going on there. There have been also examples of people starting to breathe just before a harvest, even though they've been declared dead. So, yeah, there's some very unsettling results. There's no evidence one way or the other, because what obviously normally happens once your organs have all been removed, you're not coming back, and you can't come back. One doctor told me that. Well, he said, I've never had a complaint. Well, you wouldn't. You wouldn't when your organs have all been removed. You're not going to be complaining.
How many organs typically are taken out of a donor?
On average, we're talking about, you know, not eyes or things like that or tissue, 3.3 solid internal organs per patient, yes.
Well, you note in the Wall Street Journal article that the industry of organ transplantation is now a $20 billion a year business.
Well, I just got some new reports. It's actually up to $27
billion. So. With that kind of number, is there some kind of financial incentive possibly to encourage harvesting organs in states that maybe are arguably questionable?
I think even, you know, I hate to use motive money is a total motive, because I think people have a calling, and they see there are 113,000 people on the waiting list, and you've got a guy who thinks, well, he's going to die anyway, and I can save some of those people on the waiting list. I think there's a true Good Samaritan drive to do this. At the same time, I think it does push people to push the envelope in terms of declaring patients dead, yes.
Obviously, if the vast majority of Americans, you know, who are donors, decide to pull themselves off the list hearing this kind of information, is there a way to harvest organs that you'd find more agreeable than the way we're doing now?
Well, I'm not really a social engineer or an expert at policy, but it seems to me at the very least, one should tell the truth. If you're going into an operation, an elective surgery, you are usually have to provide informed consent. You have to sign a paper that says, yes, I understand all the dangers, I understand what I'm going through, and I still want to do it. If you're an organ donor, that's not going to happen. When you indicate that you're a donor on your driver's license, what people don't realize is that they can't see ahead and see that when they're brain dead, they're dead legally, and they have no rights. So there's no negotiating power after that point. And the law says that essentially, you're dead when the doctor says you're dead. There's no appeal. You can't bring in your lawyer saying, look, I want some more tests. So I think one possible thing you can do is not sign your license, but leave extensive directions to your next of kin as to what the conditions are of donating your body once you're there in the ICU and you're about to die, so that your family can get you a good deal. Perhaps there are still some doctors who go beyond the ice water in the ear test, who will do a blood flow study to make sure your brain is totally dead, because the standard test only tests your brainstem. It doesn't test your cerebral cortex, which is your cognitive self, where you think, where your personality is, where you feel pain, for example. And you might want to have that test done and force the hospital to do that test. And you might also want to force them to use some anesthetic on you.
Dick Teresi, author of the book The Undead, Organ Harvesting, The Ice Water Test, Beating Heart Cadavers, How Medicine is Blurring the Line Between Life and Death. Dick, where can folks find your book?
Bookstores, I guess.
The ones that remain in business, right?
That's right.
Dick, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Well, thank you.
And we'll be right back with more. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS.